So translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. Purport. This verse gives a very good example by which to understand the different positions of the eternal spiritual soul in the material world and how the soul takes on different bodies. Dehantara praptihi. It's a very long purport, by the way. It's incredible what Prabhupada did towards the end of his translation work. When he did this, he must have been already in difficult physical condition. But still, his done an incredible work here. Such a long purport. It's more than two pages. Okay, so we continue on. The moon is stationary and is one, but when it is reflected in water or oil, it appears to take different shapes because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when put into the material modes of nature, it takes different bodies, sometimes as a demigod, sometimes a man, a dog, a tree, and so on. But the influence of Maya, the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity thinks that he is this person, that person. American, Indian, cat, dog, tree, or whatever. This is called Maya. When one is freed from this bewilderment and understands that the soul does not belong to any shape of this material world, one is situated in the spiritual platform Brahma Bhuta. This realization is sometimes explained as Nirakar, or formlessness. This formlessness, however, does not mean that the soul has no form. The soul has form, but the external agitating form he has acquired because of material contamination is false. Similarly, God is also described as Nirakar, which means that God has no material form, but is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Sachit Ananda Vigraha, but his material forms are temporary or illusory. Both the living entity and the Supreme Lord have original spiritual forms, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. But the Lord, the Supreme, does not change his form. The Lord appears as he is, whereas the living entity appears because material nature forces him to accept different forms. When the living entity receives these different forms, he identifies with them and not with his original spiritual form. As long as the living entity returns to his original, as soon as the living entity returns to his original spiritual form and understanding, he immediately surrenders to the Supreme Form, the Personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 7.19, Bahunam janmanamante gyanavamam prapadyate. When the living entity, after many, many births, in different forms, returns to his original form of Krishna consciousness, he immediately surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Form, Krishna. This is liberation. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18.54, anyone? What? Yes. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na shochati na kankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu mat bhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Surrender unto the Supreme Form is the result of bhakti. This bhakti, or understanding of one's own position, is the complete liberation. As long as one is under the impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth, he is not in pure knowledge, but must still struggle for pure knowledge. Klesho dika tarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Bhagavad Gita 12:5. Although one may be spiritually advanced, if one is attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, one must still work very hard, as indicated by the words klesho dikatara, which means greater suffering. A devotee, however, easily attains his original position as a spiritual form and understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original form. Krishna himself explains the forms of the living entities in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he clearly says to Arjuna that he, Arjuna, and all other living entities who were previously in their original forms are separate individual entities. They were individual in the past, they are now situated in individuality, and in the future they will all continue to maintain their individual forms. The only difference is that the conditioned living entity appears in various material forms. One more page to go. Whereas Krishna appears in his original spiritual form. Unfortunately, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge think that Krishna is like one of them and that his form is like their material forms. Avajananti mammudha manushim tanum ashritam. Bhagavad Gita 9.11. Krishna is never puffed up by material knowledge and is therefore called achyuta, whereas the living entities fall down and are agitated by material nature. This is the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entities. In this connection, it is to be noted that Vasudev, who was situated in a transcendental position, advised Kamsa not to commit further sinful activities. Kamsa, a representative of the demons, was always ready to kill Krishna or God, whereas Vasudev represents a transcendentally situated person to whom Krishna is born, Vasudev is the son of Vasudev is the son of Vasudev. Vasudev wanted his brother-in-law, Kamsa, to refrain from the sinful act of killing his sister, since the result of being agitated by material nature would be that Kamsa would have to accept a body in which to suffer again and again. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4, Rishabhadev also says, Nasadhuma nye yato yata atmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadeha. As long as the living entity is entangled in the fruitive activities of so-called happiness and distress, he will receive a particular type of body in which to endure the three kinds of suffering due to material nature, tritapa yantrana. An intelligent person, therefore, must free himself from the influence of the three modes of material nature and revive his original spiritual body by engaging in the service of the Supreme Person, Krishna. As long as one is materially attached, one must accept the process of birth, death, old age, and disease. One is therefore advised that an intelligent person, instead of being entangled in so-called good and bad fruitive activities, should engage his life in advancing in Krishna consciousness, so that instead of accepting another material body, tyaktva deham punarjanma, he will return home back to Godhead. End of purport. Long one, isn't it? Okay, the verse again. Jyotir yathaivadoka parthiveshu ada samira veganugatam ibhavyate evam svamaya rachiteshvasau puman guneshu raganuga vimuhyati raganugato vimuhyati. And the verse translation. Switch off your mobile phones, please, or put them on vibrate. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from material modes of nature. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Shri Gurundinataranam. I'm a fool who was born in darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master is trying to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. So the same thing is happening here. What is happening here? Vasudev, who's just been married to Devaki, is trying to teach, to open the eyes of Kamsa. So Kamsa is the brother of Devaki, and he hears that voice in the sky which predicts that the eighth child of Devaki and Vasudev will be the cause of your death. You fool. So, being driven by his desperate desire to remain in his body, Kamsa is ready to, he's prepared to commit the most heinous of all activities. He's ready to kill his own sister. Now Arjuna had a big trouble, you know, he was facing his guru, his cousins, his grandfather, and because he was a devotee, he had very good heart, he had trouble, you know, thinking that how can I kill those people? They're my dear and near and dear. But Kamsa, it's the opposite. He was ready to kill his own sister without blink of an eye. He was so set on committing sin. And why? Why was he so eager and ready to kill even his own sister? Because he was so attached to his material body and he wanted to preserve his material body. So, obviously, Kamsa was very, very strongly influenced by the material nature, by the material conception of I and mine. Aham mameti. This is what happens to every one of us when we fall in this material world for reasons which are very difficult to ascertain. Prabhupada says that we have been here in this material world since time immemorial. That means we cannot really trace back when our material sojourn began. It's a very long time ago. And because it's been so long, we have become so accustomed to being put in various material shapes. And every time we put in those shapes, we think that's us. It's erroneous, but unfortunately that's the situation. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi hyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya. Very difficult to overcome this material nature. Material energy of Krishna. Krishna says it's daivi, it's divine, and it's the illusory display that we are victims of is insurmountable. It's no one can go over material nature. There's only one way, and Prabhupada says it here in the purport. Whenever Prabhupada writes purports, he is referring to some other sections in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. And here he was saying that when is the living entity freed from its illusion? When it surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. Mam eva ye prapadyante. That's what's required. We have to do prapadyate. We have to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, then our illusion will be lifted. You know that verse in Ishupanishad, where the transcendentalist, the devotee, is praying to Krishna that may he lift his illusory energy, it's the curtain of Maya. So right now, we have been put into different situations according to our previous desires. And we identify with our present body. And the funny thing is that every life, every new appearance that we have, we receive a different body, different shape body. It changes. We can become anything. Prabhupada lists here a few things. Let me read. Where is it? Yes. So, by the influence of Maya, the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity thinks that he's this person, that person, and then he starts listing. American, Indian. Sounds like two opposites, right? American, Indian. Then cat, dog, tree, or whatever. So we, this is how many forms of life are there in this world? How many species of life? 8,400,000. And that's in terms of the level of consciousness. But actually, there's countless, countless pieces of life. And we, after we become influenced by material consciousness, we transmigrate. And every lifetime, we think, that's me. Now we are humans. Next life, we may become a dog. And we still think, that's me. And the analogy given here is fantastic. Let us analyze the analogy that Vasudev is using. See, when you try to instruct someone, especially if he's like Kansa, who's very proud, very agitated, you've got to be very careful how you present things. You can't really go, you know, directly and tell him, you're a fool, you're nonsense, come on, come to your senses. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jaya, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jaya, Shishi Gornitai ki jaya. You have to choose very carefully what you say and how you say it. When you have to say the truth, but you have to say in such a way that that person wouldn't become offended and he will start deliberating on what you've been trying to explain. So here, indirectly, Vasudev is trying to teach Kamsa a lesson and he's using an example from nature. It's a brilliant example. The luminaries in the sky, the sun, the moon, they look beautiful, don't they? I think there's supposed to be a full moon soon, isn't it? Or it was already 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that's right. Krishna's Rasa Yatra was there at the end of Kartik. So this Ekadashi here is beginning. Is the beginning of the new moon. That means the moon is going to start to grow again. But anyway, when you look at the sky, in the sky, and you see the beautiful sun or the beautiful moon, moon is actually more beautiful. That's why Krishna chooses to dance in the dead of night when the moon is up in the sky, not when the sun is scorching and like that. The sun is very powerful, it's also very beautiful, but the moon is more beautiful, more mystic. So, the luminaries in the sky, they look amazing, they look very beautiful, very attractive. But those luminaries, when reflected in the different reservoirs of water, or in different liquids, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, they look different. They appear to have different shapes. And especially when the wind blows, it agitates the reservoir of water in which the luminaries are reflected, and they appear to have different shapes and forms. So the analogy given here, to translate it into our condition, our situation, the luminary is the soul. It's a bright, beautiful, full of transcendental qualities. But then when it's put into the material world, which is like the reservoir of water, and then the modes of nature start blowing from here and there, then that water, which is actually our material consciousness, starts to accept different shapes and different forms. So it's a brilliant example, isn't it? So indirectly, Kamsa is being taught here by Vasudev that you are nonsense. You think that you're this temporary body, and therefore you're so afraid of your body, of losing your body. But actually, the reality is that you're originally a beautiful spiritual being who has an eternal form, and that spiritual being has also an eternal relationship with the original spiritual being who never changes his form. Prabhupada speaks about that. We, the living entities, change our forms every time we take birth, and we forget our previous forms. I mean, imagine if you were able to remember your past life. I mean, your past life, you didn't have the same form. You might have even had a different gender. So imagine you're born in a new body and you remember your past life when you were a girl. And then you go to the bathroom and suddenly you realize that something's changed. Something's different. So this is one rude example, very rude. Or, you know, in your past life you were a donkey. You had long ears, and whenever you wanted to sing, a horrible sound was coming. Was it called braying? Right, braying. And in this life, you may be a nice bird. And you sing beautifully. Or you may be a dog. It's interesting. I sometimes observe the dogs and they look like humans very much. Or the other way around. The humans sometimes, when I observe them, they look like dogs. So material nature embarrasses us. Material nature puts us in so many different forms. And if every time we identify with those forms, it's like a big theatrical performance. Maya, you know, lines us up and then says, okay, you are this, you're that, you're such and such person, you're the king, you're the slave, you're the queen, you're this, you're that, you're the servant. Maya points us, Maya gives us different roles, and then we enter into our new play, whatever it is, and then we start, you know, acting out our new role, and that changes, you know, because we go through different dramas. Could be comedies, like that. Every lifetime, we change our role. And we're so absorbed in it. We're so absorbed in it that we think that's us. That's me. I am this body. That's my family. One very vivid example in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which I can think of someone being completely in illusion, is Indra. You know Indra, sometimes he gets into trouble and he gets cursed. So one time he was cursed to become a pig. So being Indra's very elevated position, surrounded by so many demigods who are singing your glories, and you have all kinds of sense gratification in front of you, and there's apsaras, and you're very rich, and you're commanding so many gods with small g, demigods, and then he fell into very degraded position. He became a hog. He became a pig. So he was in the pig yard, whatever you call it, and he was surrounded by his loving wife, the pig, sheep pig, and his little children, the piglets. And you know, what do the pigs do? I mean, they eat stool. It's probably the most horrible thing they do. They like to roll themselves in the mud. And, you know, they live in a very confined space. And the whole, I mean, I used to go to my grandparents' village, and I would observe the pigs. They looked horrible. They were so dirty, and they would just go around the yard and sniff something, and I'm not sure what the English word for that is, but they like going in the mud, and what is it called? Huh? Foraging. Huh? Okay. Thank you. With your help, we can come to the right description of the pig. And so imagine Indra was there in the heavenly planets and surrounded by so much opulence and beautiful denizens and like that. And the next moment, he's in a pig's body, and then he likes it. He liked it. He was so attached to that new role that he was given. And it's like, you know, he was there, Indra, and then the modes of nature started blowing here and there, and the next moment he was a pig. I mean, look at the difference, contrast. And he liked it. He liked being a pig, so much so that Brahma came and tried to remind him, hey, come on, you're not a pig. Look at yourself. You are Indra, and you've fallen in this condition. And he wouldn't accept it. He was, no, I'm good, I'm fine, don't bother me. And then Brahma had to tell him, but remember that the farmer is going to come and kill you, you know, when you're nicely fed, enough, big enough, and he's going to come and kill you. So Indra wouldn't listen to that. So like that, Kamsa also, you know, he was so attached to his material body, his material condition. And also, similarly, we are in that position. We're very attached to our material bodies, to our particular situation. And we've so much identified with our present situation that it's very difficult for us to be shaken, to, you know, someone, the spiritual master comes and tells us, you're eternal servant of Krishna. And we accept it, theoretically. But it's not easy to actually understand our original position. Prabhupada gives the answer to this question. How can we come to our senses? How can we stop being under illusion? And he says that it's by the process of devotional service. When we surrender to Krishna, then we become Sagunan Samatichaitam Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. So when we surrender to Krishna, we become situated in transcendental position. And in that transcendental position, we have to advance further to understand what our spiritual form is. So, my dear friends, devotees, Prabhus, Matajis, we all have a spiritual form, original spiritual form, which is nothing like what we've experienced here. It doesn't get sick, it doesn't grow old, there is no suffering, there's no pain. And the most wonderful thing is that in that spiritual form of ours, we can participate in Krishna's pastimes. And this is what we really want, not this material condition. So the process of devotional service is the way that we can be reminded of our original position. It's a long process, but it's not as difficult as the process followed by the impersonalists, as Prabhupada says here. Their process is very difficult. Devotional service is blissful. It's full of joy. Anandam buddhivardhanam. And we get so much help from all the Vaishnavas, from the spiritual master. Actually, the idea that we gather here today, the whole idea of Prabhupada forming this ISKCON movement, was to help people, to give people an opportunity to help each other and advance nicely together. Sankirtan. Kirtan is nice, but Sankirtan is very powerful. So we are gathered here to hear about Krishna, to be reminded of our original position. I hope I made you think about your present situation. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how bad it looks, it's not your eternal position. It's a temporary situation. Think of that. Always be reminded of that. And also Maya, she works in such a way that she's trying to always, constantly bring us closer to Krishna. She's trying to make us realize that I cannot be happy here in this world. No matter how much I try, I cannot be happy. Prabhupada says, it's impossible. If there is anything impossible, it's that thing, that we can become happy here in this situation. So we have to turn our face back to Krishna. Look at this wonderful altar. Krishna is constantly engaged in his transcendental lila, and we can become part of his lila if we engage ourselves in the process of devotional service. So now, to wind it up, this is more to talking to myself. It's a wonderful opportunity to engage in blissful devotional service. The Sankirtan Marathon is going on, and Sutapa Prabhu is trying to encourage everyone to put an extra effort to please Srila Prabhupada by giving out as many books as possible and reminding as many people as possible that they're not what they think they are. Remind them of their original position. And we can participate in that joint effort by trying to distribute at least some books, at least one book. I promise I will try to distribute at least one book. Because there's so many devotees. If everyone makes an endeavor, then together we can achieve that goal of saving as many people as possible. And try to distribute books in a nice way so that people would not throw the book somewhere and forget about it, but they would think, I met a nice person, And he really impressed me with his good qualities, good behavior, and good personality. So now let me try to see what he's got to say. I mean, he gave me that book, so that book is something important I have to look at. So make good impressions. That's what Vaisheshika Prabhu says, right? That's the most important thing. When you go out and try to distribute books, the most important thing is that the person is left with good impression. Because even if they don't buy the book, if they're left with good impression, that's a beginning, good beginning. Next time they meet a devotee, they will be more inclined to buy a book. So like that, engage in devotional service. I mean, it's a humongous purport. I dread giving class on long purports because it's difficult to pick up the theme. But anyway, the main subject is that we're not these bodies. We put in this illusory situation here. And we have to find a way to get out of that situation. And the only way is through performing devotional service in the association of devotees. So I'll stop here. If there's any short questions, because I think 8:30 is the time when we have to finish.